Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, 5th chapter, text 21 and 22. Which one's on the board? Text 22 is on the board. We'll just read the first shloka in translation. Kama vada datam etat te gayanti swastriyo muhu kirating paramapunyang cha kirtayishyati bur iyam. All the blessed women in the heavenly planets will continuously chant about your spotless character at every moment. And the people of this world will also chant your glories continuously. Text 22. Sri Suka Uvacha Evang Sankirtya Rajanang Duravasaha Paritoshataha Yayo Vihaya Samantriya Vihaya Samantriya Brahmalokam Ahoitakam Sri Sukhavacha Evang Sankirtya Rajanam Duravasa Paritoshata Yayo Vihaya Samantriya Brahmalokam Ahoitakam Sri Sukhavacha. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Evam, thus, Sankirtya, glorifying Rajanam, the king, Durvasaha, the great mystic yogi Durvasa Muni, Paritoshitaha, being satisfied in all respects, Yayo left that place, Vihayasa, by the spaceways, Amantriya, taking permission, Brahmalokam, to the topmost planet of this universe, Ahoitakam, where there is no dry philosophical speculation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus being satisfied in all respects, the great mystic yogi Durvasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king. Through the skyways, he went to Brahmalok, which is devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. Please repeat. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus being satisfied in all respects, the great mystic yogi Durvasa took permission and left, continuously glorifying the king. Through the skyways, he went to Brahmalok, which is devoid of agnostics and dry philosophical speculators. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Although Durvasa Muni went back to Brahmalok through the spaceways, he did not need an airplane. For great mystic yogis can transport themselves from any planet to any other without any machine. There is a planet named Siddhalok, whose inhabitants can go to any other planet because they naturally have all the perfection of yoga practice. Thus, Durvasa Muni, the great mystic yogi, could go through the skyways to any planet, even to Brahmalok. In Brahmalok, everyone is self-realized, and thus there is no need of philosophical speculation to come to the conclusion of the Absolute Truth. Durvasa Muni's purpose in going to Brahmalok was apparently to speak to the residents of Brahmalok about how powerful a devotee is and how a devotee can surpass every living entity within this material world. The so-called gyanis and yogis cannot compare to a devotee. Om Agyana Tamranda Shyagana Anjana Shlakaya Chakswaram Laitamana Tazmai Shri Gurubay Namaha Mukam Karoti Bachalam Bangum Langayate Gurum Yat Kripatam Aham Bande Shri Gurum Dinataranam. There's a very interesting shloka in many ways. One way here is the word that describes Vihayasa by the spaceways. Vihayasa. Who can imagine such a word existing in the English language before 50 or 60 years ago? It's not possible. No one had any conception of space travel except in science fiction stories. But here we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, thousands of years old, talking about spaceways. In the ordinary course of this great Srimad Bhagavatam. So who can imagine the knowledge possessed by not just Veda Vyas, but without any question, all the saints and sages who have transmitted this knowledge to us faithfully without any adulteration, changing it to something else to make it seem maybe according to time and circumstances. There was a great controversy at one point when Srila Prabhupada was here at Radha Damodar. He translated his first book, you could say wrote, not translated, Easy Journey to Other Planets. When we were here many years ago, we had the opportunity on a very interesting sojourn to Radha Damodar, where we opened one of Srila Prabhupada's trunks. And inside that trunk were many copies of his original Easy Journey to Other Planets. So it was a very momentous occasion. This trunk had not been opened since Prabhupada closed it in 1965. This was 1984. Actually, it was earlier. That time was 1978. And in that trunk, amongst these Easy Journey to Other Planets, Prabhupada described how their futile attempt to travel to the planets, that all their efforts would be foiled, you can say. So, but later, according to time and circumstances, someone thought it would be wise, since people thought that we had landed on the moon, that that should somehow or other be adjusted. And when Prabhupada found out, he was very angry how someone has changed that without his knowledge. But anyway, a little just interesting side note here. But all by the grace of this word, Vihayasya, spaceways, which no one else could have thought of outside of the Vedic literature. And then we see that Durvasa Muni, he's going to Siddhalok. And Prabhupada comments here, why is he going to Siddhalok? In Siddhalok, everyone is self-realized. There's no need to go there for any reason, to preach, to make any show of some scholarship or erudition, to pretend to be a great Muni, to show off. Everyone there is a great Muni. But he went there to glorify a Vaishnava, Maharaj Ambarish, the greatest of all devotees. Maharaj Ambarish. So this is very significant in the sense that we see that, and Prabhupada speaks in such a way that it appears to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek, that Durvasa Muni's purpose in going to Brahmalok was apparently to speak to the residents about how powerful a devotee is. Especially after he was just nearly decapitated, burned, essentially turned into ash by the Sudarshan Chakra, by the potency of this pure devotee, Ambarish Maharaj. And so he didn't really have a choice. Sooner or later, word was going to get back to the residents of the higher planet. So better he go and glorify this devotee before his humiliating circumstances became known. This is a common tactic. You know, if you're caught into a situation, better to go and somehow or other make it right before it sneaks up on you and embarrasses you. So this, the glories of the Sudarshan Chakra were amply described. We read so much in the previous verses how the vision of the Lord manifests as the Sudarshan Chakra, and how by the glancing that the whole material world is agitated. Prabhupada even mentions that Big Bang theory, that everything came from a chunk. And he accommodates that. He says the chunk must have been glanced over by the Sudarshan Chakra. It is. Very easily, everything is put into proper perspective. That we know that there's the Mahatattva. They think it's a chunk, but it's not a chunk. But nevertheless, it's not with any life force, just the material elements, until the glance of the Sudarshan Chakra. Then, automatically, we see that the all potencies there, brought to bear, and immediately everything springs into action. So yes, we can tell the scientists, if they read Srimad Bhagavatam, they will learn everything about the spaceways, about the Vedic cosmology, about the real truth of everything. And hopefully the TOVP will go a long way to providing that visual that so many people require in order to see things. Because everyone's accustomed to seeing things. Unfortunately, Kali Yuga, they don't have the ability to hear and understand. This is one of the great fortunate circumstances that we are in, that we have the opportunity in our English language. For us, it was very difficult to imagine reading Sanskrit. Even reading Sanskrit translated by scholars like Muller. There were many books, but it was very dense and cryptic, that their translations were not at all clear because they had no realization. But as soon as you read a few words of Srila Prabhupada Srimad Bhagavatam, immediately all the meaning became revealed to those fortunate souls who were able to have this association. So the difference between a devotee's mercy in bringing the Srimad Bhagavatam or displaying the qualities to turn even this, some falsely puffed up Brahminical Asura, because Prabhupada also commented that in this case, Durvasa Muni was actually an Asura. He was acting like an Asura. He might have been a great mystic yogi, but he was categorized as an Asura. Therefore, the Sudarshan Chakra was not going to have any mercy on him. Because for the Asuras, their only benediction is to be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the same way as Hiranyakashipu Durvasa Muni. And we can see that Hiranyakashipu had no such opportunity. That it had to wait until after he was killed. That then Prahlad Maharaj went and feelingly offered prayers to the Lord and begged forgiveness on behalf of his father. And then he was delivered. But he could have been delivered in an instant if he had only taken shelter of Prahlad Maharaj. But unfortunately, he was thinking Prahlad Maharaj was a 5-year-old boy. In the same way, Durvasa Muni was thinking that Ambarish Maharaj is a Kshatriya, and therefore he is of a lower social caste. And he had no hesitation to commit offense, not knowing that, obviously, that Ambarish Maharaj was a great Vaishnava. And it's a great wonder how we could not know, since Ambarish Maharaj's glories were well known. But moga samoga kamana moga jnana vichetasaha. Obviously, his knowledge was covered by illusion for some instructive purpose. And that instructive purpose is that a Vaishnava is the most powerful person, not by some mystic strength or siddhi, but because his devotion to the Supreme Lord makes him invincible. Makes him invincible against everything, even the so-called specter of death. He is not afraid. And Durvasa Muni certainly had the power to kill anyone in an instant. But Ambarish Maharaj was completely satisfied in his faith and devotion. And so therefore he was not afraid. He was not afraid. Whereas Durvasa Muni should have been very much afraid that, perhaps, and in this case, it's always better to err on the side of caution. We don't know who is a devotee sometimes, especially in Vrindavan. Everyone is a devotee. So we have to be very, very careful not to commit offenses. And if one is busy chanting Hare Krishna, engaged in service, then he has no time to commit offenses. He has no time to let his idle mind conjure up some phantasmagorical scenario where he feels offended and must retaliate. This is all Maya's arrangements. So therefore, Prabhupada told us in Vrindavan, everyone must be engaged. There cannot be any idle, just eating and sleeping. He said, if you do this, you will become sick and you will leave. And we have seen that. The opportunity here for purification is like no other. But one has to take very seriously his responsibility on behalf of the spiritual master to conduct himself accordingly, to know that all eyes are on him, not just the 33 million demigods, but even the rickshaw wallahs. They are the news persons of Vrindavan. Right? They used to have an old joke: telegraph, telephone, tell a rickshaw wala. Right? If you tell a rickshaw wala, in an instant, it is all over Vrindavan. And whatever he sees is also all over Vrindavan. So our life is an open book, and we have to conduct ourselves accordingly. When we think of offense, someone's thinking, I'll never make offense to Ambarish Maharaj. No, of course not. We're not that elevated that we would have such association or such opportunity. But we're thinking, okay, no, this rickshaw wala, no, I can get angry with him. He's trying to cheat me. No, there's no. Devotee has no excuse for demonstrating such behavior. That's why Prabhupada told us, fix the price before you get in the rickshaw. He told us. This pearls of wisdom are coming down since that time. So we should have learned our lesson at least after 50 years. But somehow or other still we see sometimes, we hear, oh, this person is fighting with this person, this person is fighting with this person. What is the point? We're in Vrindavan. And just see, even Ambarish Maharaj, of all places, where was he performing his austerity? On the bank of the Jamuna, in Vrindavan. So where is that place where Ambarish Maharaj was standing for 1 year? I would like to visit that place. Maybe we can arrange. But Vrindavan at this time, Ambarish Maharaj, who is he? He's the grandson of Manu, or the great-grandson. So how long ago is that? Multi-millions of years ago. But even then, Vrindavan, obviously, was always Vrindavan. It's not that Vrindavan was there only when Krishna came 5,000 years ago. Vrindavan is the spiritual world in all circumstances and all time. We just, and many, don't see it. Not just that our eyes don't see. So this land of Vrindavan is very special. And the Goswamis like Raghunath Das and Raghunath, but what did they do when they came? They excavated all these holy places that were also always here, just hidden. Just hidden. Pastimes always continuously performed. And we pray that somehow, you know, we can get a little appreciation from the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, by the mercy of Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, the Diksha Shishya of Raghunath Das Goswami. We have so much. This is the real history. Not that we somehow, and that nowadays it's almost redundant to speak about the Vaishnav history when one can simply pick up a phone or pick up a tablet and go to ISKCON Desire Tree and click on Vaishnav history and read all about it. This is another amazing opportunity all over the world that people are able to visit Vrindavan vicariously through the devotees who are maintaining the institution established by Srila Prabhupada. They come on ISKCON Vrindavan TV or Mayapur TV. This is a wonderful phenomenon. And we should make every effort to connect everyone we meet with this facility. Not that we just speak in our temples or in our sadhu sangha here and there in small groups. As it was, just see the Goswamis, they were sitting there together and they were meeting every night. But they were planning how to spread Krishna consciousness. They weren't just sitting there and absorbed in the mood of the gopis. Yes, they were, obviously. But without their contemplation on how to spread this movement, then this movement would not have existed. So there's a difference. And therefore, Prabhupada gave that conclusion, the Bhajananandi and Goshtianandi. So these Goswamis were not simply Bhajananandis. They were calculating how to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. They knew. It says that the Vaishnav, the sadhu, this elevated Uttama, they're Trikalagya, so they see everything. And now, right now, they're seeing this. Who can imagine how these things are going on? It's a little bewildering. Like looking into, they have something called a Mobius strip or infinity mirrors, that if one looks into it, he becomes a little bewildered because his mind cannot conceive of all these aspects simultaneously, like the universal form. Arjuna was bewildered. Why? Because his mind could not take it all in. But we can appreciate sitting here in this timeless atmosphere, in this timeless land, that this Bhagavatam has been spoken since time immemorial. And not here only, but on the heavenly planets, on Brahmalok. So we're very thankful that such pastimes have been documented for us to be amazed how such things as spaceways or different planetary systems or the different inhabitants or the different activities are all taking place for us to meditate on so that we can free our minds of all these material, mundane calculations and pastimes, always thinking how we can do this or how we can do that. We want to concentrate on how we can please Krishna and how we can please the spiritual master. And the two are non-different. One cannot please Krishna without pleasing the spiritual master. It is not possible. Yasya devi para bhakti yata deve tata guru. They're not separate. One has to have implicit faith in both. Nowhere does it say that if one has implicit faith in Krishna. Krishna says, sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishto. He gives a hint. By all the Vedas I am to be known. I am in the heart. But how does this knowledge come about? How is it revived? It's there. And that is by the agency of Chaita Guru, the spiritual master. He knows when you are ready, when you are sufficiently sincere, when you are eligible. And we have all seen, everyone who is sitting here has had that experience, has had that revelation. But sometimes we don't hold that revelation. When I was a young devotee, and Srila Prabhupada was speaking in our Henry Street temple, and he was speaking so clearly, and I thought, if I can just remember this moment of clear consciousness, hearing the pure devotee describe the pastime of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and knowing that this is the absolute truth, if I can just remember this, then I can try to have a reference point whenever Maya approaches. And Maya approaches many times. But if one can remember that moment of clarity, then his whatever temporary bewilderment he is facing, that can be dissipated. But he has to remember that. It's almost like the time when you felt a little clarity, like, oh, Maya and Krishna, distinctly. And of course, Krishna is in front, and Maya recedes to the back. And this is how it should remain. But we have the tendency sometimes to forget. Is it possible that Durvasa Muni didn't? I mean, we see he went to the spiritual world, to Narayana, to beg. So he knows that Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it seems. Because he went to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva also. So maybe he was just playing the odds. But in any case, he went to Lord Narayana, and Lord Narayana said, no, you have to go. And you have to take shelter and beg forgiveness of Ambarish Maharaj. That is the only way to become free from this Sudarshan Chakra, this offense. So it's very, very clear from that Durvasa Muni was not some ordinary person. He was self-realized. But that self-realization was not enough to prevent him from committing an offense. So we have to make a distinction. That self-realization, knowing that I am not this body, that I am spirit soul. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabjate. He did not have that conclusion, apparently. So we have to be cautious. We have to practice this realization by carefully executing our prescribed duties, our fixed number of rounds, and our service to the spiritual master. This way we can be secure and safe. Just like when a storm comes, everyone seeks shelter. Only a madman stands out with the lightning and the thunder and the rain and the flood and the wind. No normal person, no sane person does that. Sane person takes shelter. So we have to take shelter, you know, of this process. We have to know how. We have to know where is the door, how to enter, how to get along with the other inhabitants in that shelter, lest we become again kicked out into the storm of Maya. It happens, right? The two potencies are there, throwing and covering. Prabhupada told us in Mayapur, he used the example, he said, sometimes someone is coming, but after a few days he is leaving. Means he was thrown out. Prabhupada said that. Means he was thrown out. By Maya, not by the temple authorities. That happens too sometimes. No, he was thrown out by Maya. Maya directly kicked him out. She didn't let him stay. She bewildered him in his mind, and he couldn't stay. There was an interesting recollection about the word bloop. Has everyone heard the term bloop? Everyone? Yeah? This is a term that was invented on Second Avenue by Brahmananda Prabhu, our dear God brother. Prabhupada had described how the living entity falls back into the material pool. And so Brahmananda made the sound, bloop. And he told to Srila Prabhupada and said, yes, he has blooped. So it is confirmed. So all these indications are there. Srila Prabhupada knew very well that when one falls back into the material pool, however the circumstances arrange, he has blooped. So we should not bloop from Krishna consciousness. We should stay secure in the shelter of the association of devotees. We should not be like Durvasa Muni. We should not be looking to find fault on some insignificant. And Prabhupada described that Ambarish Maharaj was envious. So this is the seed for these offenses. That if one is envious for whatever reason, then he will make offenses. So this is the cause. And the cure is to chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If one is chanting sincerely, envy cannot enter into his heart. It is not possible. And if he is not chanting sincerely, then so many things will come. And then the Maya's two potencies, the throwing and covering, they will come. They are standing there, just waiting. So, my humble request, we should follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis. Their example is glorious. And through them, we have so much to be thankful for. We couldn't say enough in a million classes. So I'll again recommend just ISKCON Dujayatri. And if there's any questions or comments or criticisms, but be careful. Not criticism. He's the first, see?
So it seemed like Durvasa Muni didn't really want to apologize. He ran over here. For a whole year, he was like cornered and boxed in. So was it the voluntary appreciation of Ambarish Maharaj, or was it just to save his neck? And volunteer here, because we're all supposed to preserve it, because we're all volunteers, so how do you apply force on someone by will, by his own will, he doesn't want to do this?
Yeah, a very nice question by our humble temple president. The Dorvasa Muni was forced, but at the same time, nothing could have saved him, just like Hiranyakashipu could not be saved. But by the mercy of a Vaishnava. So therefore it's described that because Ambarish Maharaj took pity on him, therefore he was saved. Nothing he could do on his own. So yes, forced. Sometimes we are forced, you know, to recognize our faults. Maybe by the grace of our dear God brothers, who are not shy to tell us when we're deviating. One should have such friendship, and he should be very thankful to have such friendship. That someone is so fond of him that he will not hesitate to remind him that, Prabhu, I haven't seen you for the last 3 days. Is everything okay? Is your health? They did that too. Was that Raghunath Bhatt or Raghunath Das? When he ate too much sweet rice in his meditation, he didn't show up for a couple of days. So the devotees went looking for him. Where are you? Are you okay? And he said, I'm not feeling well. And then they brought Vallabhacharya's son, Vital, brought some doctors, and they went to see him. And they diagnosed his condition that this seems to be that he has eaten too much milk products. And they said, it is not possible. He only eats buttermilk every 2 or 3 days. It's not possible. How could he be afflicted? But he was afflicted because he ate too much in his meditation, in his samadhi. So we should be very careful not to eat too much sea rice. Is that the purport? No. We should be careful not to commit offenses. Now we should be very compassionate. Even if someone is not showing up for a couple of days, we should inquire very sincerely, my dear God brother, God son, etc. Otherwise one never knows. I mean, I could tell many stories about such great souls who we didn't understand who they were. And sometimes we're a little harsh. And it's only by Krishna's mercy that I think that we're still alive in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we'd be just like Ambarish Maharaj. As a temple commander, I was a temple commander in a big temple, 55th Street, Manhattan. And I had a job. I had to wake everyone up, every single person, 230 people, and go to every floor with a bell and knock on every door. And every door. Say, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. And some devotees, they would not move. One time, one devotee, and I don't know if he was talking in his sleep, I said, Prabhu, and I knew he'd been up late working because that temple commander has to arrange. Some things have to be done at night. So this devotee was part of the night crew. But still he had time to sleep and then wake and then again sleep in the day. So I was a little forceful saying, because he's one of my men, Prabhu, you have to wake up. Come on, let's go. He said, Prabhu. He said, Krishna consciousness is just like a boat. And we've all heard this analogy. The spiritual master is the captain. The Vedas are the favorable breezes. ISKCON is the boat. And he said, and the boat is going. And I'm on the boat. But some of us are sleeping on the boat. And I said, and I thought, okay. I've got another 100 people to wake up. I can't argue. I just took it for what it was and I continued on. So such pastimes are there. So in any case, so many, oh, but another, very nice. the glories of Vrindavan, how merciful, Radha Gokula Nanda, and the Govardhan Srila of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In the old days, we could go to Radha Gokula Nanda, and the Pujari would bring the Srila, and he would let us hold it. And we could hold it, and we could feel Mahaprabhu's thumbprint. Because Mahaprabhu held it for 3 years. And the pressure of his finger massaging his thumb made an indentation, which is very visible. Anyone can see that that's there. But that mercy, who can imagine? I don't know if they Pujari still allow the devotees to touch. Anyone go to Radha Gokula Nanda lately? And does the Pujari still let you hold the Srila? Not possible. Those days are gone. Such wonderful times were there. Any other questions? Yes, my dear God brother.
So Rasa Muni is a very famous character. He is
character indeed.
With the large devotees in the Vishnu Puran, the Vayu Puran, Padma Puran, Aiti Puran, the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, the Harivamsa, the Matsya Puran, as well as here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Are we to understand that his anger towards the Lord's devotees, which develop various leelas in which the Lord becomes involved, are we to understand this is the Lord's arrangement, his anger, or is he simply lacking in perfection of his own volition?
Another good question. The fact that he's in so many Puranas means he has longevity, at least. And he couldn't have made so many offenses or he wouldn't have survived. This one almost killed him. And most of his other pastimes seem to be pretty benign. But at least in this one, he crossed the line. So it just goes to show that you can do so many things and be in so many places and have so much association. But if you offend a Vaishnava, that's the end of the line. So be careful. And all of your previous pastimes are not going to save you. You can be a big, big man. And we've seen this. Even in our short history of 53, 55 years in ISKCON, that we've had big, big men. And they fell just as easily as small men. They even say that. The bigger you are, the harder you fall. So one has to be careful. One should not take some position for any reason other than to execute the order of the spiritual master. To be an instrument in the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is our perfection. The Rasa's perfection, he was just serving himself. He had no real perfection. He was enjoying his mystic powers. He could go anywhere and everywhere. He was kind of like just a free agent, eating wherever he wanted, bothering people, creating disturbances, going around with his 60,000 or plus followers. So he was not a nice house guest. Nobody really wanted him. He just barged in. So, but that personality is, we see that personality in others. So that, I think the lesson there is, don't be like Durvasa Muni. That's the lesson. Go here and there. Sometimes we see people go from this ashram to that ashram to that ashram just to satisfy their senses or to make a show of some scholarship. To pretend, you know, that I'm such and such person and I speak at this temple, I speak at that. Our only desire is to glorify the Supreme Lord wherever we are, under every circumstance, whenever there's an opportunity. Prabhupada gave the hint to Satsarupa Maharaj the first time After 1 year, when Prabhupada went to the West Coast, to San Francisco, Prabhupada had never left New York up to that point. And the devotees were a little unsure what's going to happen. Brahmananda was the temple president. And they asked Srila Prabhupada, who will give class? Because no one else ever gave class. Only Prabhupada gave class. And so it was a good question. They said, Prabhupada, who will give class? And Prabhupada said, you will all give class. And Satyajit Maharaj said, but what will we speak about? Prabhupada said, you'll speak according to your realization. And then Satyajit Maharaj told us confidentially one time, he said, those were the shortest classes in ISKCON history. Because if one speaks only on his realization, so, and Satyajit, he elaborated, he said, well, you know, we're not the body, we're spirit, soul, Krishna is God, you know, and we're his servants. That was it. So everything starts in a small way. And it's a fact. No one should speak beyond his realization. Otherwise, what he's not... How is that... Samo damo tapaso cham santir ajavami vacha jnanam vijnanam sahitam brahma karma subhavajam. Says that the Brahman is known by his actions. And that knowledge, gyan, and big gyan, if one doesn't have realized knowledge, then how he can act accordingly, how he can speak accordingly, then he's just repeating like a parrot. He doesn't know. Because I can tell you, unfortunately, due to my past previous material activities and mental speculation, I am a subject matter expert in some very mundane sciences. And I can speak on them because I have some realization. And I can teach on them also, but it is not transcendental. But anybody can read from a book about how to make a surgical operation. But then he cannot do a surgical operation. So knowledge and wisdom are two different things entirely. And one has to be a little honest and make some self-assessment whether I can speak honestly without going above my pay grade. Any other questions? Hare Krishna.
So we should learn from there what we have to do. So sometimes we offend the devotee and we don't ask forgiveness. And we are our ego, we cannot do our ego wrong. Otherwise, we go and complain to the authority. And authority, whatever I say or you can say, I agree with that confession. How we should ask forgiveness from the person who they are offending?
To the best of my knowledge, the only way to ask forgiveness is to approach that Vaishnava, as it's described here. One cannot take a shortcut. There is no shortcut. You cannot think, well, I've asked forgiveness in my mind. No. That cannot be said like that. Forgiveness means that Ambarish Maharaj had to forgive. Otherwise, it's just mental concoction. No, in my mind, I've begged forgiveness. One can do that. Maybe he needs to practice first. But there is no substitute. And we have, even our God brothers, we see our elevated God brothers. How we know they're elevated? Because they have that humility that they go before. They think, even if they haven't committed offense, they go and they say, Prabhu, if I've committed any offense, please forgive me. Srila Prabhupada, here, of all persons, begged forgiveness from his god brothers that if I have committed any offense, knowingly or unknowingly, please forgive me. Please forgive me. So this, an example like that, we don't need any other example. Any other? The 9 o'clock bell has rung. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam, all glories to Maharaj Ambarish, the six Goswamis, even Durvasa Muni. And all glories to all the devotees of the Lord. Yeah.